You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
Over the last few months, I've become not obsessed, but certainly intrigued by the US 10-year Treasury bond yield. Not that long ago, it was 0.75%. Quite recently, it was 1.75% at the height of the fears for US inflation running away. And yet just 2 days ago, no, 3 days ago on Monday, it got as low as, I think, 1.12%. So anyway, from 0.75 to 1.75 down to, for all intents and purposes, 1.10%. And then yesterday, it rallied to 1.30%. Everyone I've spoken to has no clue as to what is going on. So I've engaged the services of someone who does know what's going on. He's speaking to me from Warsaw, the capital of Poland. His name is Lee Adler. He's from the Wall Street Examiner and Liquidity Trader. So Lee, please put me out of my misery. What on earth is going on? Because these moves are unprecedented.
Yeah, everybody's really confused about it, but we weren't. The people that subscribe to Liquidity Trader, we're not confused. And it's very simple, really. It's very basic. And it has to do with the amount of cash that the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Treasury have been pumping into the market relative to the amount of new Treasury supply that the U.S. government is issuing month in and month out. It always boils down to supply and demand. Demand is driven by liquidity, the cash in investor and dealer accounts, and supply is simply the amount of new paper that the U.S. government issues. Excuse me. In recent months, actually in February, on February 23rd, the U.S. Treasury was sitting on $1.6 trillion in cash. That was pretty near the high of what they had hit immediately after the pandemic panic. It got up to 1.8 trillion. And they were under a legal mandate to reduce that. So in February, on February 23rd, they began to redeem outstanding Treasury bills. They began to pay down the couple trillion in U.S. Treasury bills that were held by money market funds and other investors. at that time, that 1.6 trillion was the cash hoard they were sitting on, and they began to spend that to repay the holders of those T-bills. And over the next several months until now, they managed to spend a trillion of that 1.6 trillion, and approximately 700 billion of that they spent to pay down these T-bills. So in other words, if you were holding a Treasury bill and you were one of the unfortunate people that were having your Treasury bills redeemed, the U.S. government was going to give you your money back, your cash. All right. So you no longer had the T-bill, but you now had, let's say, $10 billion in cash for those bills that you held. Let's assume you're a big institution. And you have no place to go because they removed that paper from the market. So in some cases, in most cases, they rolled the money into these Federal Reserve reverse repos, which have been growing and growing and growing. But in other cases, they bought treasuries further out on the yield curve. In other words, they had to go longer term. So they bought 2-year and 5-year and 10-year paper at the margin, and this began to push the prices of those bonds up, and concomitantly the yields go down as prices rise. So it was simply a matter of too much cash in the market, too much cash in the pockets of investors and dealers. They had no place to go with it. So they bought 10-year treasury bonds, and that pushed the prices up and the yields down. And that brings us to where we are today.
And is that a short-term phenomenon, what you've just described, the actions of the U.S. Federal Reserve, or will it continue? Was it a moment in time, in other words?
Yeah, good question, because we've already had an enormous move, like you said, from 175 down to 112. Now there's been, or 115, I think was low, maybe 112. There's been a little bit of reversal in the last 2 days, pushing the yields back up to 130. And it looks like a temporary bottom in yield, where they're going to kind of mess around between 115, maybe 130, 140. But the ingredients are still in place for additional, declines in yields over the next couple months, because we have now another situation that's cropping up, and that is the reimposition of the federal debt ceiling in the United States. That is an issue that comes around every few years, And the government, the politicians decide, okay, well, we're going to put a ceiling on the amount of debt that the U.S. government can issue. And that happens on July 31. Now, when the U.S. government can no longer issue debt, that removes supply from the market. So when you reduce supply, again, you create additional problems in that all this cash is in the market and now there's no supply. So I see the potential for yields to go. If you look at the technical charts on the 10-year, we could see 105, 110 in the next couple of months after this bouncing around between 130 and, you know, 120, 140 for a while. But I do think yields will go lower before they go higher.
So what are you saying, now, Lee, just to summarize here in my simple mind, there has been a draining of liquidity and it's all to do with financial engineering, and it could or could not be a moment in time, as I said earlier on, or it could become a trend that means that the supply is constrained for a considerable time. And inflation or no inflation, yields are going to remain suppressed.
Inflation is irrelevant. Okay, that's true. Now, when you say a draining of liquidity, there has been a transfer of liquidity that was sitting in the account of the U.S. Treasury into the accounts of holders of Treasury bills, including money market funds, primary dealers, and other big investors. So they've had an enormous injection of liquidity, about $700 billion transferred from the U.S. Treasury into their accounts. And this is on top of the regular Federal Reserve quantitative easing purchases every month. So there's been an enormous increase in market liquidity. Okay. So that has driven prices of bonds up and yields down. So there's been an increase in liquidity, not a draining. As the debt ceiling comes into effect, there's going to be even more liquidity coming in because the Treasury will no longer be issuing debt until they run out of cash. They still have $600 billion in cash in their account now. Now, we have some idea how long it'll take for that to run down. I'll preserve that idea for subscribers to the Liquidity Trader newsletter. But we have an idea of the timeline of when that cash is going to run out. And we've had this theater of the absurd before with the debt ceiling. The politicians will raise the debt ceiling, but only at the last possible minute. That's the way they behave. When the U.S. government is threatening to default because it has no more cash, the politicians will raise the debt ceiling. At that point, they have to repay all of the money that they borrowed internally from, they've robbed from their pension fund accounts and other accounts, and they're going to have to raise, maybe a trillion in new debt in a very short period of time, and that will crash the markets. So first we're going to get this enormous continuation of this enormous rally in treasuries for a few more months, and then we're going to have a thunderous reversal.
A thunderous reversal. But in the meantime, the short-term view is that on July the 31st, things start to happen because that's the debt ceiling argument that you've just described.
Yes. At that point, the Treasury is going to have to start playing accounting games, and they will at some point have to stop issuing new debt to the public. And it's very difficult to estimate when that'll be because they have a lot of strategies that they can employ by borrowing from internal funds. And we really don't know what Yellen's plans are in that regard. And she's put out some vague warnings, you know, we're going to run out of money in August. And I don't believe it'll be August. I think it's later than August. But she wants to motivate the politicians to raise that debt limit sooner rather than later, because the longer it takes, the more chaos it'll engender when they finally lift it.
Okay, 0.75 up to 175, down to 115. That's your number, so I'll use that. Where to now? It's currently just below 130. Where to now for the U.S. 10-year? And indeed, is the U.S. 10-year the one to watch? Or should we be watching the T-bill or the 2-year note? What's your advice?
I watch the 10-year. It's the benchmark yield that the market watches, and everything sort of plays off of that. So I'm not really sure what the shorter yields are going to do. Obviously, some funds are limited to buying much shorter term paper. So we're going to see the T-bill rates at or pretty close to zero for a while. The 10-year, as I said, I think it'll be range bound now. Whether it can go a little higher than 130 in the short run, I don't know. But I suspect we'll see a trading range somewhere 115 to 135 for a few months. And then, you know, during that period, 1 to 3 or 4 months, probably we could see 105 to 110, given that the debt ceiling is going to limit new supply. At that point, I think if I'd been able to take advantage of the rally, I'd probably want to get out.
Okay. And your target? I mean, you talked about a thunderous event. You didn't say event, but you used the word thunderous.
After that.
What do you mean? What do you mean by that?
Well, we get to 105, 110, and then they raise the debt limit, and then the Treasury comes into the market and has to sell hundreds of billions of new debt in a very short period of time to replenish the Treasury's cash account, to repay the internal accounts that they've raided in the meantime. And that will put upward pressure. Hard to say beyond that whether this is a long-term trend that'll break out above 175. I think, you know, as time goes on, we'll get a better picture of how large the monthly deficit is running, how much spending there's going to be. We still don't know if there's going to be an infrastructure spending. So there are too many variables that we just can't know beyond the lifting of the debt ceiling. But I think at the very least we're going to retest 175, 178 on the 10-year. And I suspect that in the long run we will go higher. But there's just no way to know because there are just too many variables, and we're going to have to watch that as time goes on and sort of track the trend and be ready to move when the trend indicators tell us to move.
Yeah, too many things going on. Is the People's Bank of China's policy also important to the U.S. Federal Reserve's policy?
Obviously, we're not operating in a vacuum, and there are just too many variables beyond the next few months to make an accurate prediction of what happens in the long term.
What about inflation? You said inflation means nothing. Of course inflation means something. It's 5.4% at the moment, albeit off a low base, albeit as described by Jerome Powell as transitory and probably will come back. But why is it not important when savers are being punished because the inflation rate is 5.4 and their savings are yielding virtually nothing?
Well, if inflation mattered, and as we watch these rapid rises in the consumer price index, we would have seen higher yields. Okay. But instead the yields went lower, which is why all of the Wall Street pundits and analysts are scratching their heads wondering what the hell's going on. Because the only thing that matters is supply and demand. And that's driven by the cash in the holders, in the accounts of the holders and buyers, the institutions and other entities that normally buy this paper. Now the Fed is buying outright or funding 90% of it, either buying it outright or indirectly funding it, 90-95% of it. When the Treasury stops paying down T-bills, the Fed's share of that will drop back to around 85%, and that won't be enough to keep yields down. They'll start rising again. This is why I think we're going to see 175 again. So inflation is kind of irrelevant. People are going to worry about it and wonder about it, and I do think it's going higher. And I don't think that these things are transitory. I think they're a direct result of all the worldwide central bank money printing. There's too much money and not enough goods. This is classic inflation. As far as CPI, the CPI doesn't measure inflation. 5.4% is a joke. U.S. housing prices and world housing prices, indeed, are not included in any of these inflation measures. And in the U.S. alone, housing inflation is running 13-15% or more all over the country, some places higher. And that is not included in the consumer price index or the PCE price index that the Fed looks at. So inflation in reality is much higher, and yields don't reflect it because it's simply not a matter of that affects yields.
So inflation is going to 10 to 15%, which is a private message that you sent me about a month ago. You've been predicting this for a while. You think ultimately it will catch up no matter how much the bean counters and the statisticians try to manipulate the stats.
Yeah, well, there's what inflation is and what the Bureau of Liar Statistics reports. Those are two completely different numbers. You know, the CPI in 1982, the Reagan administration, in its infinite wisdom, removed housing prices from the CPI simply because the CPI was intended as a tool to index labor contracts and government contracts and government benefits and wages. And it became too expensive to continue to include housing. If housing were included today at 40% of the core CPI, we would already be at 8 or 9 or 10% in that statistic. So, you know, who knows where total overall inflation really is. Housing inflation matters, and they don't count it. So I think that, yeah, 10 or 15% is certainly out there. Now they use another measure called owner's equivalent rent that is a lagging suppressed indicator. But as these housing prices continue to rise, this lagging indicator is going to start catching up, even though it is suppressed. And it's already beginning to reflect rent increases in the market of 8 or 9% and even higher in some areas. So I do think that the CPI is going to continue rising for some time. Whether it gets to 10 or 15, I don't know, because, again, it doesn't count everything.
During this conversation, you were rather enigmatically coy and teasing about the people that have been subscribing to Liquidity Trader already knew this. So I want now to know how to get hold of a subscription for Liquidity Trader and also, not to mention, Wall Street Examiner.
Right. Well, Wall Street Examiner, I publish my free thoughts on the very short term, the day-to-day movements of the market. That's at wallstreetexaminer.com, and some of your active traders might find that interesting. And my long-term analysis I publish at liquiditytrader.com, and just look for the link for subscriber options, and you can find the different subscriptions. I offer new subscribers 90 days to look over the service risk-free. And if they don't like it, there's a money-back guarantee. And hopefully everybody likes it and sticks with it, and it helps them to understand exactly what's going on in the market and what they should be doing about it.
And given what you've just said, I think it's exactly the right time to know what's going on in the market. Lee Adler, thank you so much for your time. Lee Adler is from the Wall Street Examiner and Liquidity Trader, speaking to us from Warsaw, the capital of Poland. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.